listening to the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Daily Gold Podcast. With me today is Rick Rule. And look, if you're listening to this, you probably know that Rick has forgotten more about natural resource investing than all of us know. So it's a real pleasure to have Rick here today. And Rick, I'm just going to shoot from the hip. You were doing another interview. I don't know when, but I caught it, a month or so ago. And it really struck me because you were talking, the interview person asked you about market timing and, trying to time how you decide which, commodity you go into and all of that. And you were really talking about, my words, not yours, but how buying value is really a form of market timing. And my words, buying value is the best form of market timing. So can you explain how when you're looking at companies and you really identify value that I think for most people, and especially in natural resource investing, that can be a more effective form of market timing than just trying to, assess when a certain commodity is going to move and then, buying a company that has that commodity in the name.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the ranks of self-made financial billionaires minted over the last 40 years, there's one trader, Paul Tudor Jones. The rest are investors. I don't like to go against arithmetic. If I look at a circumstance that's minted 200 investors and one trader, I reckon I'd do better off hanging out with the investors than the traders. There was a time, Jordan, and you and I talked about this before we went live, where I thought that my time preference mattered. I thought that what happened between now and a long weekend was relevant. But money's made in the 3-year time frame, in the 4-year time frame, in the 5-year time frame, whether we choose to admit it or not. Timing for me is finding a commodity that has to go up in price. Generally, those commodities are very, very, very out of favor. People who have a 3-month time frame, irrespective of their timing, won't make any money because money is made on the move in a commodity from being hated to being tolerated to being loved. All of a sudden, there's a bunch of newly minted uranium bulls out there. Where were they 3 years ago when uranium was at 20 bucks a pound? They were hanging out in lithium or pot. Timing is about finding commodities that have to go up and understanding it might take you 2 years or 3 years or 5 years to be right. That's what timing's about.
Right. Now, one follow-up on that, because you mentioned a commodity goes from being hated to tolerated to love. So in the current cycle, let's focus on gold and silver. And maybe it's a different answer for both because, silver tends to lag gold. But the hated, tolerated, love, where do you think gold and silver are in that continuum?
Gold likely tolerated, silver hated. Silver disappointed the silver bugs, including the new to silver bugs around Reddit. And there's no hate that's more profound than a lover scorned. So as a speculative asset class, silver is really, really, really despised, which is why, as a speculator, I'm attracted to it. I'm attracted to gold for very different reasons. I'm attracted to gold because I view it in my own portfolio as both liquidity and insurance. It's actually a commodity that helps me sleep nights. And at age 70, Jordan, that's high praise indeed. For me, it's off the sort of hated, tolerated, loved, sort of axis. And it operates in a different part of my portfolio. But in direct answer to the question, I think gold is tolerated, not hated. I think hated as a speculative asset class applies to silver.
Okay, let me stick with that because I know that certainly interests you as a speculator. Is it fair for me and the listeners to infer that then you're more, again, I know you're more focused on the companies and the commodities, yeah, but if you find silver more hated, then are you a bit more interested in the silver names than the gold names right now?
I end up being at age 70, and I don't want to sound I would say too proud, but 70 and rich, I find myself gravitating towards market beta and insurance, which is to say, I don't have the need to make the speculative gains that I had in my 20s. And I don't want to work as hard as I worked in my 20s. So my portfolio is more gold-centric, even though I have lower expectations for my gold than my silver. The second thing is that the universe of silver stocks that one can even speculate on with a straight face is fairly small. Now, that's both a blessing and a curse, which is to say I can't find many places to put my money, but neither can anybody else. If the generalist money comes into the silver space, as Doug Casey famously points out, there isn't enough market capitalization space in that silo to contain the money that comes into it. When the silver sector, the silver equities in particular, return to favor, when the narrative brings the generalist investors into silver, the price performance is unbelievable. But speculators don't seem to have a sense of history. Speculators don't remember, except very, very old ones like myself, fossils, if you will. They don't remember Coeur d'Alene going from 10 cents to $65. They don't remember Silver Standard going from 72 cents to $45. They don't remember Pan American going from 50 cents to $45. Their memories are much more recent. And in that sense, I think they have much less patience, not the type of patience that's required to be an uber successful speculator.
Okay. Again, let me follow up again. So we're talking about patience. So how much more patience do you think gold and silver investors need to have before?
It's funny that you asked that question. I started adding to my physical gold hoards again in the year 2000. And between 2000 and today, the gold prices moved from $256 to what? $2,050? That's a pretty good move. So when people ask me when the move in gold will begin, I say 2000. if I want to be more recent, 2020. I think people need to examine their expectation with regards to outlook. You know, the truth is that people are anti-speculators and people are anti-investors. We believe ourselves to be independent fact seekers. We believe that what we do is search for information everywhere we can, codify that information, and use it rationally to arrive at investment conclusions. But that's not what we do. We look for information that supports our existing paradigms and preferences, prejudices, and we suffer from ugly recency bias, which is to say that people are more inclined to go for a commodity that's up 300%, that doesn't need to go higher, than they are to look for a commodity that hasn't moved yet, that does have to go up. It's ironic that the biggest investment risk that most investors and speculators face is very conveniently located to the left of the right ear and to the right of the left ear. It isn't just that the information that we receive is stilted, it's that we take that information and we abuse ourselves with it.
Okay, so with that being said, I want to talk about just gold and silver stocks, you know, junior, the whole sector as a whole.
Yeah.
Where do you think is the best value right now? Is it in the producers, the developers, or the explorers?
For who? For an investor who can't take much risk and who doesn't want to do any work, they want to be in the senior producers. If I'm right, this market will give you 300 or 400% gains in beta, the outperformance of gold relative to the broad market. For speculators who are willing to do the work, to pay attention to the daily gold, who are willing to read balance sheets, willing to read income statements, willing to read 43-101s, the most hated sector is the exploration sector, the sector that has the most risk. But when you ask the question, where is there the most value, it depends on for who. An investor who isn't going to do the work, an investor for whom volatility is a risk, not a tool, that type of investor won't be able to find value in small stocks because he or she are unwilling and unable to tolerate the process by which value is achieved. If I had to pick one stock today, it would be a very unpopular stock. It would be Franco Nevada. The risk is right in front of you in Panama. It's easy to identify. The stock has fallen by 40% because an asset is in question that is responsible for 15% of net present value. There is $10 billion invested in that deposit, and it generated about 25% of Panama's export earnings. If the Panamanian voters are numerate, they would understand that they can't afford to obviate an asset that generates 25% of their export earnings, and they can't afford a $10 billion default judgment in favor of Franco and First Quantum. Because the risks are in front of everybody and the reward requires arithmetic, that's become a hated gold stock, which is, of course, why I love it.
Given where we are in the, let's say, gold and silver cycle, you know, the metals prices, they're off the lows. You know, gold's trying to break out here. I mean, silver's just behind it. Just focusing on juniors, let's say we're focusing on speculators.
Yep.
I mean, does that in any way change your calculus as far as where there, you know, where the most value? In other words, like if we start to see, you know, higher metals prices in the next 3 or 6 months, I mean, could that make the developers, for example, could that make them have the most value, or will they be the most unloved, or do you think it would still be? I know I'm asking you to speculate.
You know, there's value throughout the sector right now. There's beta. If I'm right about the gold price, the big gold stocks are going to do great. And the fact is they'll move before the small ones do, because they'll be the beneficiary of the price increases first. The developers, if you look at companies that are pre-production, the discounts to net present value are the greatest that they have been in my 50 years in the business, the boring part of the Lassonde curves. If they can deliver on time, on budget completion at nameplate capacity, these stocks are all going to re-rate at this gold price, not at a higher gold price. If you are willing to work harder, endure more volatility, and take more risk, everybody hates exploration. There's nothing I like as much as a sector that everybody hates. And of course, as you know, Jordan, I'm particularly attracted to exploration in countries that people hate. So for me, exploration in Kazakhstan or something like that would be really, truly the golden grail. Understanding that the probability of failure is high, but the reward for success is 50 baggers or 60 baggers. So I really think when you ask the question, you need to identify which user you're asking the question on behalf of.
Right.
I don't think there's a one size fits all. I suggested to you when you and I met in person here at my house that for many investors and speculators, they might want to construct a whole natural resource portfolio out of royalty and streaming stocks. They would exhibit less downside risk. They would exhibit less upside potential, but they would take a great big fat slug out of the middle, having to do less work. That's not a very exciting prospect, but it might be a very good conclusion for people if they were self-honest.
Rick, in your experience, I mean, looking back to the bull markets of the 2000s, the 1970s, and some of the other periods, I mean, you personally, I mean, I'm pinning you down personally. Yeah. We're not talking about sure. Hypothetical other people. But in those periods and other periods, you personally, which type of juniors have you profited the most? Is it exploration companies or producers or developers?
No, really, four things have worked for me. Exploration has worked the best. Participating in a grassroots discovery is the type of success that is only rivaled by a technological breakthrough. I've been fortunate enough to experience things like Paladin, 10 cents to $10. You know, Purina in Arequipa, 30 cents to $30. I've had a few of those, and they're really fun. Statistically speaking, the most reliable form of exploration success is the boring ones, the prospect generators. I've invested now in about 70 of them over 40 years, and I've enjoyed 22 takeovers, which is to say something like a 33% success ratio, which is stupidly high in exploration. But I'm unusually geared to exploration. I was also successful, very successful, in the early part of the decade of the 1990s in optionality, which is to say financing companies that bought deposits in commodities that were out of favor. That was very, very, very cheap. And we built companies in those days like Pan American and Silver Standard, buying silver in the ground for 5 cents an ounce when it was selling on world markets for $4 an ounce, thinking that those deposits, while valueless at $4, would be worth something at 15. And of course, the silver price went to 50 as opposed to 15. Optionality is no longer cheap, but it's something that works stupidly well for me in my past. So and of course, I've made a lot of money by speculating in commodities out of favor. Uranium now twice. Uranium was so out of favor in 1998 that when I talked about it from investment podiums, the audience wasn't bored. They were hostile. They accused me of trying to profit from Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and Three Mile Island. Ironically, 6 or 7 years later, when the stocks were all up 20-fold, the very people who hated me were asking for uranium stock tips. Somehow increasing price escalation obviates morality, I guess. Fast forward to 3 years ago, uranium was a four-letter word because it disappointed people in 2019, 2020. And by missing an out-of-favor commodity, people missed a uniform tripling or quadrupling of uranium stocks, including the low-risk ones like Cameco. So I've made a lot of money by buying things that had to go up.
Okay, that's a great segue to I could follow up with that. So looking at everything in commodities right now, what do you feel has to go up? That's not priced in.
Yeah, I think oil and gas stocks have to go up. The oil industry worldwide is underinvesting about $1 billion a day in sustaining capital investments, which impairs their ability to produce. In the out years, despite the fact that oil demand will remain strong, oil supply will begin to falter. People say, what about alternative energies? There's a place for alternative energies, but globally, we've spent $5 trillion, trillion, on alternative energies in 40 years, and we've reduced the market share of fossil fuels from a high of 82% all the way down to 81%. $5 trillion has reduced the market share of fossil fuels by 1%. And North American natural gas, which is distinctly out of favor, is the cheapest sector of all. The price of North American natural gas, either in the United States or at AECO in Alberta, is something like $3.50 per million BTU, while the price of that same gas in Tokyo or Rotterdam is $8 per million BTU. It costs a buck to compress it and ship it. This is a stupidly broad arbitrage. The big thinkers, of course, would have you believe that peak oil demand is going to occur in 2032, the Bidens and the Trudeaus and the noted energy physicist, what's her name, Greta Thunberg, would have you believe that peak oil demand occurs in 2032. They sadly, I guess, omit the fact that 1 billion people on Earth have no access to primary electricity. We need more energy worldwide. We need more coal, whether we want it or not. We need more oil and gas. We need more hydro. We need more geothermal. We need more solar, but not in Toronto or Hamburg, where the sun doesn't shine. We need more wind, but in Lethbridge, not Vancouver, where the wind doesn't blow. You follow what I'm saying? But we need all economic sources of energy. You need to look at the ones that have to go up, not the ones that could go up.
Okay, Rick. Circling back to gold and silver, because that's my focus and my focus of my audience. Is any last words that you want to mention to? I mean, I know buying value is at your core, but is anything you want to mention or expound upon?
I think first of all, if you don't have a 2 to 5 year time frame, you're only going to make money by accident. Okay. So I'm speaking to those that have a 2 to 5 year time frame, those people who actually have a chance to make some money in their lives. I think that a price rise in gold and then later silver is inevitable, if not imminent. And I'm not talking about a price rise from $2,000 to $2,100 or $2,200. I'm not talking about a 30 or 40% increase in share price. I'm talking about an increase in the gold price that is more reminiscent of the move from 2000 to 2011. Perhaps not a sevenfold move, but I think a much higher move. And I don't think it'll happen in a time frame that's convenient to people. We've cited the statistic before on your show, Jordan, that precious metals market share in the United States savings and investment market is less than 0.5%, which is to say that 0.5% of the savings and investment assets of Americans are comprised of precious metals related investments. Over 40 years, the four decade median market share is 2%. I'm not suggesting that gold will supplant the U.S. 10-year treasury or the Dow. I'm suggesting that fondness for it will return to mean, which will result in a fourfold increase in demand. All sectors of the precious metals business over the five-year time frame will do well. Whether or not they'll do well in 2024 is a very different question. But if you define who you are as an investor, how much work you're willing to do, how much volatility you're willing to endure, how much reward you want, you can define where you will be inside a sector which inevitably will outperform, I would suggest, the broad market.
Rick, before I let you go, I know there's a couple things that you're working on. First, let's talk about, I'm sorry the name escapes me right now because I'm so deep into everything that you're saying, but I know, is it ruleinvestmentmedia.com? Is that the website?
Yeah.
Please tell our audience, you know, what they can find from you and how they can get you to rank their stocks that they hold in their portfolio.
Go to ruleinvestmentmedia.com. List your natural resource stocks. Please no crypto. Please no tech stocks. Please no pot stocks or psilocybin stocks. I'll rank them 1 to 10, 1 being worst, 1 being best, 10 being worst. No obligation, by the way, no charge. And I'll provide individual commentary if I think my commentary is worth anything to you. Visit the Rule Classroom. There's 200 hours of programming there about how to invest in natural resource companies. And if you think it's worth your while, attend my boot camps. They're 8-hour-long presentations about how to invest in uranium, how to invest in silver, how to invest in royalty and streaming stocks. The upcoming one is about developers, pre-production stage companies. $99, absolute positive money-back guarantee. If you didn't get your $99 worth, email me. I'll give you your money's worth. It's an 8-hour presentation. You'll be watching the transcripts for a year. If it wasn't worth your while, tell me to give you your money back. I'll absolutely, positively do it. So Rule Investment Media for rankings, Rule Classroom for 200 hours of programming, and the Rule Investment Symposiums, or, quote, the boot camps for 8-hour-long discussions, thematic discussions of natural resource investing, including, of course, the Developers Workshop, which is coming up.
Before you tell us about Battle Bank, Rick, I'm just curious, how many 9s or 10s do you give out in those ratings?
Lots. Way more than 1s or 2s. It goes from, a 10 is a no-risk short. It's an obvious fraud. And it requires a real bull market when people are taking leave of their money. And the scamsters who were until very recently offering scam coins are around doing mining stocks. So, you know, 10 is pretty rare. It's an obvious scam. 5 years from now, there'll probably be 50 or 60 obvious scams when a bull market is underway. Similarly, on the other end of the spectrum, ones are unbelievable bargains. They have to be selling at less than half of my estimate of net present value at current commodity prices. They have to offer up the possibility of a five-year tenfold gain. And there has to be a catalyst in place which will double the share price at current commodity prices within 18 months. Those are very rare stocks. I've given out 11 one rankings in 35 years of ranking stocks.
Okay, great. And Rick, finally, something that's absolutely not a scam is Battle Bank. Please tell our listeners why they should care, you know, where they could go to find more info.
Well, people who are happy with their current banking relationships, they're very scarce, don't need to go to Battle Bank. But if you aren't happy with your current bank, you should consider Battle Bank. Battle Bank, among other things, rather than offering you 15 savings products, many of which purport to pay you no interest, we'll have one money market account that you can write checks on. In other words, we'll pay you interest, top quartile interest, on your savings. We will allow you to save in 22 currencies, not just the U.S. dollar. If you decide to save in Canadian dollars or Australian dollars or euros or yen, you can get a federally insured deposit at Battle Bank in 22 different currencies. We believe that your IRA is your IRA. It's not a vehicle for our own product. So if you want your IRA to own an owner-operated duplex or fourplex, we can help you with that. And by the way, we could write the first mortgage on that piece of residential real estate in your IRA. If you want to own private equity in your IRA, you can do that too with our help. If you own physical gold and silver, the U.S. banking community doesn't believe that that's good collateral. I think it's great collateral. If you own gold or silver in segregated accounts at Brinks, Loomis, or Viamat, we will lend you money or establish a credit facility that you don't have to take down so that you have access to liquidity on your existing holdings of gold and silver. Try that at your regular bank. They can't spell gold despite the fact that it's a four-letter word. If you care more about that, when you go to ruleinvestmentmedia.com, write bank in the question and comment section, or else go to battlebank.com. The name is deliberate. We're battling for better banking. I maintain deposit relationships, real relationships, with four financial supermarkets. And I'm a hell of a client. When I borrow money, I pay it back, and I have large deposits. And I would describe my existing relationships with these banks as sullen, but not yet mutinous. My relationship should be ecstatic. That's the reason I'm doing banking. By the way, never start a bank as a way to be retired. The idea that I'm doing this at age 70 is only a reflection of the fact that I think the market is so large for disruption. You'll recall, Jordan, that 20 years ago, or more than 20 years ago now, the same people who founded Battle Bank founded EverBank for the same reason. We grew it from zero to $28 billion. We sold it. The people who bought it have done a good job, as it were, but they've abandoned the type of business that allowed us to build that business from zero to $28 billion in deposits. So we're going to do it again.
Excellent. Rick, thanks so much for taking the time today to speak to me and my audience. I really appreciate it, and I hope we can have you back again sometime next year. And if I don't talk to you, I wish you a very happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and a great 2024.
And to you, I hope I see you up at the Vancouver Resource Conference, or I hope I see you at PDAC, or both.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.